Lord.
Maud grabbed Marillion roughly by the collar. No more mouth. When he spoke, Sansa saw to her astonishment that the jailer's teeth were made of gold. They watched as he half-dragged, half-shoved the singer toward the doors. The man must die, Sir Marwyn Belmore declared when they were gone. He should have followed Lady Lysa out the moon door. Without his tongue, Sir Albar Royce added. Without that lying, mocking tongue. I have been too gentle with him, I know, Peter Baelish said in an apologetic tone. If truth be told, I pity him. He killed for love. For love or hate, said Belmore, he must die. Soon enough, Lord Nestor said gruffly. No man lingers long in the Skycells. The Blue will call to him. It may, said Peter Baelish, but whether Marillion will answer, only he can say. He gestured, and his guardsmen opened the doors at the far end of the hall. Sirs, I know you must be weary after your ascent. Rooms have been prepared for all of you to spend the night, and food and wine await you in the lower hall. Oswell, show them the way and see that they have all they need. He turned to Nestor Royce. My lord, will you join me in the solar for a cup of wine? Elaine, sweetling, come pour for us. A low fire burned in the solar, where a flagon of wine awaited them. Arbor gold. Sansa filled Lord Nestor's cup, whilst Peter prodded at the logs with an iron poker. Lord Nestor seated himself beside the fire. This will not be the end of it, he said to Peter, as if Sansa were not there. My cousin means to question the singer himself. Bronze Yone mistrusts me. Peter pushed a log aside. He means to come in force. Simon Templeton will join him, do not doubt it, and Lady Waynewood too, I fear. And Lord Belmore, young Lord Hunter, Horton Redfort, they will bring strong Sam Stone, the Tollets, the Shetts, the Coldwaters, some Corbrays. You are well informed. Which Corbrays? Not Lord Lionel. No, his brother, Sir Lynn, mislikes me for some reason. Lynn Corbray is a dangerous man, Lord Nestor said doggedly. What do you intend to do? What can I do but make them welcome if they come? Peter gave the flames another stir and set the poker down. My cousin means to remove you as Lord Protector. If so, I cannot stop him. I keep a garrison of 20 men. Lord Royce and his friends can raise 20,000. Peter went to the oaken chest that sat beneath the window. Bronze Yone will do what he will do, he said, kneeling. He opened the chest, drew out a roll of parchment, and brought it to Lord Nestor. My lord, this is a token of the love my lady bore you. Sansa watched Royce unroll the parchment. This is unexpected, my lord. She was startled to see tears in his eyes. Unexpected, but not undeserved. My lady valued you above all her other bannermen. You were her rock, she told me. Her rock? Lord Nestor reddened. She said that? Often. And this, Peter gestured at the parchment, is the proof of it. That is good to know. John Arryn valued my service, I know, but Lady Lysa, she scorned me when I came to court her, and I feared. Lord Nestor furrowed his brow. It bears the Arryn seal, I see, but the signature. Lysa was murdered before the document could be presented for her signature, so I signed as Lord Protector. I knew that would have been her wish. I see. Lord Nestor rolled the parchment. You are dutiful, my lord, aye, and not without courage. Some will call this grant unseemly and fault you for making it. The keeper's post has never been hereditary. The Arryns raised the gates in the days when they still wore the falcon crown and ruled the Vale as kings. The Eyrie was their summer seat, but when the snows began to fall, the court would make its descent. Some would say the gates were as royal as the Eyrie. There has been no king in the Vale for 300 years, Peter Baelish pointed out. The dragons came, Lord Nestor agreed, but even after, the gates remained an Arryn castle. John Arryn himself was keeper of the gates whilst his father lived. After his ascent, He named his brother Ronald to the honour, and later his cousin Denny's. Lord Robert has no brothers and only distant cousins. True. Lord Nestor clutched the parchment tightly. I will not say I had not hoped for this. Whilst Lord John ruled the realm as hand, it fell to me to rule the Vale for him. I did all that he required of me and asked nothing for myself. But by the gods, I earned this. You did, said Peter, and Lord Robert sleeps more easily, knowing that you are always there, a staunch friend at the foot of his mountain. He raised a cup. So, a toast, my lord, to House Royce, keepers of the gates of the moon, now and forever. Now and forever, aye. The silver cups crashed together. Later, much later, after the flagon of Arbor Gold was dry, Lord Nestor took his leave to rejoin his company of knights. Sansa was asleep on her feet by then, wanting only to crawl off to her bed. But Peter caught her by the wrist. You see the wonders that can be worked with lies and Arbor Gold? Why did she feel like weeping? It was good that Nestor Royce was with them. Were they all lies? Not all. Lysa often called Lord Nestor a rock, though I do not think she meant it as a compliment. She called his son a clod. She knew Lord Nestor dreamed of holding the gates in his own right, a lord in truth as well as name. But Lysa dreamed of other sons and meant the castle to go to Robert's little brother. He stood. Do you understand what happened here, Elaine? Sansa hesitated a moment. You gave Lord Nestor the gates of the moon to be certain of his support. I did, Peter admitted. But our rock is a Royce, which is to say he is overproud and prickly. Had I asked him his price, he would have swelled up like an angry toad at the slight upon his honour. But this way, the man is not utterly stupid, but the lies I served him were sweeter than the truth. He wants to believe that Lysa valued him above her other bannermen. One of those others is Bronze Yeon, after all, and Nestor is very much aware that he was born of the lesser branch of the House Royce. He wants more for his son. Men of honour will do things for their children that they would never consider doing for themselves. She nodded. The signature. You might have had Lord Robert put his hand and seal to it, but instead I signed myself as Lord Protector. Why? So, if you are removed or killed, Lord Nestor's claim to the gates will suddenly be called into question. I promise you that is not lost on him. It was clever of you to see it, though no more than I'd expect of mine own daughter. Thank you. She felt absurdly proud for puzzling it out, but confused as well. I'm not, though, your daughter, not truly, I mean. I pretend to be Elaine, but you know. Little Finger put a finger to her lips. I know what I know, and so do you. Some things are best left unsaid, sweetling. Even when we are alone, especially when we are alone. Elsewise a day will come when a servant walks into a room unannounced, or a guardsman at the door chances to hear something he should not. Do you want more blood on your pretty little hands, my darling? Marillion's face seemed to float before her, the bandage pale across his eyes. Behind him she could see Ser Dontos, the crossbow bolt still in him. No, Sansa said. Please. I am tempted to say, this is no game we play, daughter, but of course it is. The Game of Thrones. I never asked to play. The game was too dangerous. One slip and I am dead. Oswell, my lord, Oswell rode me from King's Landing the night that I escaped. He must know who I am. If he's half as clever as a sheep pellet, you would think so. Sir Lothar knows as well. But Oswell has been in my service a long time, and Brune is close-mouthed by nature. Kettleblack watches Brune for me, and Brune watches Kettleblack. Trust no one, I once told Eddard Stark, but he would not listen. You are Elaine, and you must be Elaine all the time. He put two fingers on her left breast, even here, in your heart. Can you do that? Can you be my daughter in your heart? I do not know, my lord, she almost said, but that was not what he wanted to hear. Lies and arbor gold, she thought. I am Elaine, father. Who else would I be? Lord Littlefinger kissed her cheek. With my wits and cat's beauty, the world will be yours, sweetling. Now, off to bed. Gretchel had laid a fire in her hearth and plumped her feather bed. Sansa undressed and slipped beneath the blankets. He will not sing tonight, she prayed, not with Lord Nestor and the others in the castle. He would not dare. She closed her eyes. Sometime during the night she woke as little Robert climbed up into her bed. I forgot to tell Lothar to lock him in again, she realized. There was nothing to be done for it, so she put her arm around him. Sweet Robin, you can stay, but try not to squirm around. Just close your eyes and sleep, little one. I will. He cuddled close and laid his head between her breasts. Elaine, are you my mother now? I suppose I am, she said. If a lie was kindly meant, there was no harm in it.
Dunk paused outside the castle sept. God's grant I am not too late. His sword belt was back in its accustomed place, cinched tight about his waist. He had strapped the gallows shield to his wounded arm, and the weight of it was sending throbs of pain through him with every step. If anyone brushed up against him, he feared that he might scream. He pushed the doors open with his good hand. Within, the sept was dim and hushed, lit only by the candles that twinkled on the altars of the seven. The warrior had the most candles burning, as might be expected during a tourney. Many a knight would have come here to pray for strength and courage before they chanced the lists. The stranger's altar was shrouded in shadow, but with a single candle burning. The mother and the father each had dozens, the smith and maiden somewhat fewer, and beneath the shining lantern of the crone knelt Lord Ambrose Butterwell, head bowed, praying silently for wisdom. He was not alone. No sooner had Dunk started for him than two men-at-arms moved to cut him off, faces stern beneath their half-helms. Both wore mail beneath surcoats striped in the green, white, and yellow undie of House Butterwell.
"Hold, sir," one said. "You have no business here."
"Yes, he does. I warned you he would find me." The voice was Egg's. When Egg stepped out from the shadows beneath the father, his shaven head shining in the candlelight, Dunk almost rushed to the boy to pluck him up with a glad cry and crush him in his arms. Something in Egg's tone made him hesitate. He sounds more angry than afraid, and I have never seen him look so stern. And Butterwell on his knees. Something is queer here. Lord Butterwell pushed himself back to his feet. Even in the dim light of the candles, his flesh looked pale and clammy. "Let him pass," he told his guardsmen. When they stepped back, he beckoned Dunk closer. "I have done the boy no harm. I knew his father well when I was the king's hand. Prince Maekar needs to know none of this was my idea." "He will," Dunk promised. "What is happening here?"
"Peek, this was all his doing, I swear it by the seven."
Lord Butterwell put one hand on the altar.
"May the gods strike me down if I am false. He told me whom I must invite and who must be excluded, and he brought this boy pretender here. I never wanted to be part of any treason, you must believe me. Tom Heddle, now, he urged me on, I will not deny it. My good son, married to my eldest daughter. But I will not lie, he was part of this."
"He is your champion," said Egg. "If he was in this, so were you."
"Be quiet," Dunk wanted to roar. "That loose tongue of yours will get us killed."
Yet Butterwell seemed to quail.
"My lord, you do not understand. Heddle commands my garrison."
"You must have some loyal guardsmen," said Egg.
"These men here," said Lord Butterwell. "A few more. I've been too lax, I will allow, but I have never been a traitor. Frey and I harbored doubts about Lord Peak's pretender since the beginning. He does not bear the sword. If he were his father's son, Bittersteel would have armed him with Blackfire. And all this talk about a dragon, madness, madness and folly. His lordship dabbed the sweat from his face with his sleeve. And now they have taken the egg, the dragon's egg my grandsire had from the king himself as a reward for leal service. It was there this morning when I woke, and my guards swear no one entered or left the bedchamber. It may be that Lord Peak bought them, I cannot say, but the egg is gone. They must have it, or else the dragon's hatched, thought Dunk. If a living dragon appeared again in Westeros, the lords and small folk alike would flock to whichever prince could lay claim to it. My lord, he said, a word with my squire, if you would be so good. As you wish, sir. Lord Butterwell knelt to pray again. Dunk drew Egg aside and went down upon one knee to speak with him face to face. I am going to clout you in the ear so hard your head will turn around backwards, and you'll spend the rest of your life looking at where you've been.
You should, sir.
Egg had the grace to look abashed.
I'm sorry. I just meant to send a raven to my father.
So I could stay a night. The boy meant well. Dunk glanced over to where Butterwell was praying. What did you do to him?
Scared him, sir.
Aye, I can see that. He'll have scabs on his knees before the night is done.
I didn't know what else to do, sir. The maester brought me to them once he saw my father's ring.
Them?
Lord Butterwell and Lord Frey, sir. Some guards were there as well. Everyone was upset. Someone stole the dragon's egg.
Not you, I hope. Egg shook his head.
No, sir. I knew I was in trouble when the maester showed Lord Butterwell my ring. I thought about saying that I'd stolen it, but I didn't think he would believe me. Then I remembered this one time I heard my father talking about something Lord Bloodraven said about how it was better to be frightening than frightened. So I told them that my father had sent us here to spy for him, that he was on his way here with an army, that his lordship had best release me and give up this treason, or it would mean his head. He smiled a shy smile. It worked better than I thought it would, sir. Dunk wanted to take the boy by the shoulders and shake him until his teeth rattled. This is no game, he might have roared. This is life and death.
Did Lord Frey hear all this as well?
Yes. He wished Lord Butterwell happiness in his marriage and announced that he was returning to the Twins forthwith. That was when his lordship brought us here to pray.
Frey could flee, Dunk thought, but Butterwell does not have that option. And soon or later he will begin to wonder why Prince Maekar and his army have not turned up. If Lord Peak should learn that you are in the castle... The Sept's outer doors opened with a crash. Dunk turned to see Black Tom Heddle glowering in mail and plate, with rainwater dripping off his sodden cloak to puddle by his feet. A dozen men-at-arms stood with him, armed with spears and axes. Lightning flashed blue and white across the sky behind them, etching sudden shadows across the pale stone floor. A gust of wet wind set all the candles in the Sept to dancing. Oh, seven bloody hells, was all that Dunk had time enough to think before Heddle said,
"There's the boy. Take him."
Lord Butterwell had risen to his feet.
"No, halt. The boy is not to be molested. Tomard, what is the meaning of this?"
Heddle's face twisted in contempt.
"Not all of us have milk running in our veins, your lordship. I'll have the boy."
"You do not understand."
Butterwell's voice had turned into a high, thin quaver.
"We are undone. Lord Frey is gone, and others will follow. Prince Maekar is coming with an army."
"All the more reason to take the boy as hostage."
No, said Butterwell. "I want no more part of Lord Peak or his pretender. I will not fight."
Black Tom looked coldly at his lord.
"Craven,"
he spat.
"Say what you will. You'll fight or die, my lord."
He pointed at Egg.
"A stag to the first man to draw blood."
"No, no!"
Butterwell turned to his own guards.
"Stop them, do you hear me? I command you, stop them!"
But all the guards had halted in confusion, at a loss as to whom they should obey.
"Must I do it myself, then?"
Black Tom drew his long sword. Dunk did the same.
"Behind me, Egg."
"Put up your steel, the both of you!" Butterwell screeched. "I'll have no bloodshed in the Sept! Sir Tomard, this man is the prince's sworn shield. He'll kill you."
"Only if he falls on me."
Black Tom showed his teeth in a hard grin.
"I saw him try to joust."
"I am better with a sword," Dunk warned him. Heddle answered with a snort and charged. Dunk shoved Egg roughly backwards and turned to meet his blade. He blocked the first cut well enough, but the jolt of Black Tom's sword biting into his shield and the bandaged cut behind it sent a jolt of pain crackling up his arm. He tried a slash at Heddle's head in answer, but Black Tom slid away from it and hacked at him again. Dunk barely got his shield around in time. Pine chips flew and Heddle laughed, pressing his attack, low and high and low again. Dunk took each cut with his shield, but every blow was agony, and he found himself giving ground.
"Get him, sir!" he heard Egg call. "Get him! Get him! He's right there!"
The taste of blood was in Dunk's mouth, and worse, his wound had opened once again. A wave of dizziness washed over him. Black Tom's blade was turning the long kite shield to splinters.
"Oak and iron guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell,"
Dunk thought, before he remembered that this shield was made of pine. When his back came up hard against an altar, he stumbled to one knee and realized he had no more ground left to give.
"You are no knight," said Black Tom. "Are those tears in your eyes, oaf?"
"Tears of pain."
Dunk pushed up off his knee and slammed shield first into his foe. Black Tom stumbled backwards, yet somehow kept his balance. Dunk bowled right after him, smashing him with the shield again and again, using his size and strength to knock Heddle halfway across the sept. Then he swung the shield aside and slashed out with his longsword, and Heddle screamed as the steel bit through wool and muscle deep into his thigh. His own sword swung wildly, but the blow was desperate and clumsy. Dunk let his shield take it one more time and put all his weight into his answer. Black Tom reeled back a step and stared down in horror at his forearm flopping on the floor beneath the stranger's altar.
"You,"
he gasped.
You.
"I told you." Dunk stabbed him through the throat.
"I'm better with a sword."
Two of the men-at-arms fled back into the rain as a pool of blood spread out from Black Tom's body. The others clutched their spears and hesitated, casting wary glances toward Dunk as they waited for their lord to speak.
This was ill done," Butterwell finally managed.
He turned to Dunk and Egg.
"We must be gone from White Walls before those two bring word of this to Gorman Peak. He has more friends amongst the guests than I do. The postern gate in the north wall. We'll slip out there. Come, we must make haste."
Dunk slammed his sword into its scabbard. "Egg, go with Lord Butterwell." He put an arm around the boy and lowered his voice.
"Don't stay with him any longer than you need to. Give Rain his head and get away before his lordship changes sides again. Make for Maidenpool. It's closer than King's Landing."
"What about you, sir?"
"Never mind about me.
I'm your squire."
"Aye," said Dunk, "and you'll do as I tell you, or you'll get a good clout in the ear."
A group of men were leaving the great hall, pausing long enough to pull up their hoods before venturing out into the rain. The old ox was amongst them, and weedy Lord Caswell once more in his cups. Both gave Dunk a wide berth. Sir Mortimer Boggs favored him with a curious stare, but thought better of speaking to him. Uthor Underleaf was not so shy.
"You come late to the feast, sir,"
he said as he was pulling on his gloves.
"And I see you wear a sword again. You'll have your ransom for it if that's all that concerns you."
Dunk had left his battered shield behind and draped his cloak across his wounded arm to hide the blood.
"Unless I die, then you have my leave to loot my corpse."
Sir Uthor laughed.
"Is that gallantry I smell, or just stupidity? The two scents are much alike, as I recall." "It is not too late to accept my offer, sir."
"It is later than you think," Dunk warned him. He did not wait for Underleaf to answer, but pushed past him through the double doors. The great hall smelled of ale and smoke and wet wool. In the gallery above, a few musicians played softly. Laughter echoed from the high tables, where Sir Kirby Pym and Sir Lucas Nayland were playing a drinking game. Up on the dais, Lord Peake was speaking earnestly with Lord Costaine, while Ambrose Butterwell's new bride sat abandoned in her high seat. Down below the salt, Dunk found Sir Kyle drowning his woes in Lord Butterwell's ale. His trencher was filled with a thick stew made with food left over from the night before. A bowl of brown, they called such fare in the pot shops of King's Landing. Sir Kyle had plainly had no stomach for it. Untouched, the stew had grown cold, and a film of grease glistened atop the brown. Dunk slipped onto the bench beside him.
"Sir Kyle?"
The cat nodded.
"Sir Duncan, will you have some ale?"
"No." Ale was the last thing that he needed.
"Are you unwell, sir? Forgive me, but you look..."
"Better than I feel. What was done with Glendon Ball?"
"They took him to the dungeons."
Sir Kyle shook his head.
"Whores get or no, the boy never struck me as a thief."
"He isn't." Sir Kyle squinted at him.
"Your arm? How did..."
"A dagger." Dunk turned to face the dais, frowning. He had escaped death twice today. That would suffice for most men, he knew. Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall. He pushed to his feet.
"Your Grace,"
he called. A few men on nearby benches put down their spoons, broke off their conversations, and turned to look at him.
"Your Grace,"
Dunk said again more loudly. He strode up the mirrorish carpet toward the dais.
"Damon!"
Now half the hall grew quiet. At the high table, the man who'd called himself the Fiddler turned to smile at him. He had donned a purple tunic for the feast, Dunk saw. Purple to bring out the color of his eyes.
"Sir Duncan, I am pleased that you are with us. What would you have of me?"
"Justice," said Dunk, "for Glendon Ball."
The name echoed off the walls, and for half a heartbeat, it was as if every man, woman, and boy in the hall had turned to stone. Then Lord Costaine slammed a fist upon a table and shouted,
"It's death that one deserves, not justice!"
A dozen other voices echoed his, and Sir Harbert Page declared,
"He's bastard born! All bastards are thieves or worse! Blood will tell!"
For a moment, Dunk despaired. "I am alone here." But then Sir Kyle the Cat pushed himself to his feet, swaying only slightly.
"The boy may be a bastard, my lords, but he's Fireball's bastard. It's like Sir Harbert said, blood will tell."
Damon frowned. "No one honors Fireball more than I do," he said. "I will not believe this false knight is his seed. He stole the dragon's egg and slew 3 good men in the doing."
"He stole nothing and killed no one," Dunk insisted. "If 3 men were slain, look elsewhere for their killer. Your Grace knows as well as I that Sir Glendon was in the yard all day, riding one tilt after the other."
"Aye," Damon admitted. "I wondered at that myself.
But the dragon's egg was found amongst his things.
Was it? Where is it now?
Lord Gorman Peake rose, cold-eyed and imperious.
Safe and well guarded. And why is that any concern of yours, sir?
Bring it forth, said Dunk. I'd like another look at it, my lord. The other night I saw it only for a moment.
Peake's eyes narrowed. Your grace, he said to Damon. It comes to me that this hedge knight arrived at White Walls with Sir Glendon, uninvited. He may well be part of this.
Dunk ignored that.
Your grace, the dragon's egg that Lord Peake found amongst Sir Glendon's things was the one he placed there. Let him bring it forth if he can. Examine it yourself. I'll wager you it's no more than a painted stone.
The hall erupted into chaos. 100 voices began to speak at once, and 12 knights leapt to their feet. Damon looked near as young and lost as Sir Glendon had when he had been accused.
Are you drunk, my friend?
Would that I were. I've lost some blood, Dunk allowed, but not my wits. Sir Glendon has been wrongfully accused.
Why?
Damon demanded, baffled.
If Ball did no wrong, as you insist, why would his lordship say he did and try to prove it with some painted rock?
To remove him from your path. His lordship bought your other foes with gold and promises, but Ball was not for sale.
The fiddler flushed.
That is not true.
It is true. Send for Sir Glendon and ask him yourself.
I will do just that. Lord Peake, have the bastard fetched up at once, and bring the dragon's egg as well. I wish to have a closer look at it.
Gorman Peake gave Dunk a look of loathing.
Your grace, the bastard boy is being questioned. A few more hours, and we will have a confession for you, I do not doubt.
By question, my lord means tortured, said Dunk. A few more hours, and Sir Glendon will confess to having killed your grace's father, and both your brothers, too.
Enough!
Lord Peake's face was almost purple.
One more word, and I will rip your tongue out by the roots.
You lie, said Dunk.
That's 2 words.
And you will rue the both of them,
Peake promised.
Take this man and chain him in the dungeons.
No. Damon's voice was dangerously quiet. I want the truth of this. Sunderland, Veerwell, Smallwood, take your men and go find Sir Glendon in the dungeons. Bring him up forthwith, and see that no harm comes to him. If any man should try to hinder you, tell him you are about the king's business.
As you command,
Lord Veerwell answered.
I will settle this as my father would,
the fiddler said. Sir Glendon stands accused of grievous crimes. As a knight, he has a right to defend himself by strength of arms. I shall meet him in the lists, and let the gods determine guilt and innocence.
Hero's blood or whore's blood, Dunk thought when 2 of Lord Veerwell's men dumped Sir Glendon naked at his feet. He has a deal less of it than he did before. The boy had been savagely beaten. His face was bruised and swollen. Several of his teeth were cracked or missing. His right eye was weeping blood, and up and down his chest, his flesh was red and cracking where they'd burned him with hot irons.
You're safe now, murmured Sir Kyle. There's no one here but hedge knights, and the gods know that we're a harmless lot.
Damon had given them the maester's chambers and commanded them to dress any hurts Sir Glendon might have suffered and see that he was ready for the lists. 3 fingernails had been pulled from Ball's left hand, Dunk saw, as he washed the blood from the boy's face and hands. That worried him more than all the rest.
Can you hold a lance?
A lance?
Blood and spit dribbled from Sir Glendon's mouth when he tried to speak.
Do I have all my fingers?
10, said Dunk,
but only 7 fingernails.
Ball nodded.
Black Tom was going to cut my fingers off, but he was called away.
Is it him that I'm to fight?
No. I killed him. That made him smile.
Someone had to.
You're to tilt against the fiddler. But his real name
is Damon. Aye, they told me. The Black Dragon.
Ser Glendon laughed.
My father died for him. I would have been his man, and gladly. I would have fought for him, killed for him, died for him. But I could not lose for him.
He turned his head and spat out a broken tooth.
Could I have a cup of wine?
Ser Kyle, get the wineskin. The boy drank long and deep, then wiped his mouth.
Look at me. I'm shaking like a girl.
Dunk frowned. Can you still sit a horse?
Help me wash, and bring me my shield and lance and saddle,
Ser Glendon said,
and you will see what I can do.
Daenerys.
What is it?
She cried, as Eri shook her gently by the shoulder. It was the black of night outside. Something is wrong, she knew at once.
Is it Dario? What's happened?
In her dream, they had been man and wife, simple folk who lived a simple life in a tall stone house with a red door. In her dream, he had been kissing her all over, her mouth, her neck, her breasts.
No, Khaleesi,
Eri murmured. It is your eunuch, Grey Worm, and the bald men. Will you see them?
Yes.
Her hair was disheveled, and her bedclothes all tangled, Danny realized.
Help me dress. I'll have a cup of wine as well, to clear my head.
To drown my dream. She could hear the soft sounds of sobs.
Who is that weeping?
Your slave, Miss Andy. Jiqui had a taper in her hand.
My servant. I have no slaves.
Danny did not understand.
Why does she weep?
For him who was her brother, Eri told her. The rest she had from Skarhaz, Resnek, and Grey Worm, when they were ushered into her presence. Danny knew their tidings were bad before a word was spoken. One glance at the shaved pate's ugly face sufficed to tell her that.
The sons of the Harpy.
Skarhaz nodded. His mouth was grim.
How many dead?
Resnek wrung his hands.
Knowing magnificence, foul work it was, and wicked. A dreadful night, dreadful.
Nine? The word was a dagger in her heart. Every night the Shadow Wars was waged anew beneath the step pyramids of Meereen. Every morn the sun rose upon fresh corpses, with harpies drawn in blood on the bricks beside them. Any freedman who became too prosperous or too outspoken was marked for death.
Nine in one night, though.
That frightened her.
Tell me.
Grey Worm answered. Your servants were set upon, as they walked the breeks of Meereen, to keep your grace's peace. All were well armed with spears and shields and short swords. Two by two they walked, and two by two they died. Your servants, Black Fist and Setharis, were slain by crossbow bolts in Mazdan's maze. Your servants, Musador and Durand, were crushed by falling stones beneath the river wall. Your servants, Eladon, Goldenhair, and Loyal Spear, were poisoned at a wine shop where they were accustomed to stop each night upon their rounds.
Musador?
Danny made a fist. Missandei and her brothers had been taken from their home on Naith by raiders from the Basilisk Isles and sold into slavery in Astapor. Young as she was, Missandei had shown such a gift for tongues that the good masters had made a scribe of her. Musador and Marcellin had not been so fortunate. They had been gelded and made into unsolid.
Have any of the murderers been captured?
Your servants have arrested the owner of the wine shop and his daughters. They plead their ignorance and beg for mercy.
They all plead ignorance and beg for mercy.
Give them to the shave pate, Skarhaz. Keep each apart from the others and put them to the question.
It will be done, your worship. Would you have me question them sweetly or sharply?
Ah, sweetly, to begin. Hear what tales they tell, and what names they give you. It may be they had no part in this.
She hesitated.
Nine, the noble Resnick said. Who else?
Three freedmen, murdered in their homes, the shave pate said. A moneylender, a cobbler, and the harpist, Rylona Ree. They cut her fingers off before they killed her.
The queen flinched. Rylona Ree had played the harp as sweetly as the maiden. When she had been a slave in Yonkai, she had played for every high-born family in the city. In Meereen, she had become a leader amongst the Yonkish freedmen, their voice in Danny's councils.
We have no captives but this wine cellar?
None, this one grieves to confess. We beg your pardon.
Mercy, thought Danny. They will have the dragon's mercy. Skahas, I have changed my mind. Question the man sharply.
I could, or I could question the daughter sharply, whilst the father looks on. That will wring some names from him.
Do as you think best, but bring me names.
Her fury was a fire in her belly.
I will have no more unsullied slaughtered. Grey Worm, pull your men back to their barracks. Henceforth, let them guard my walls and gates and person. From this day it shall be for Myrinese to keep the peace in Meereen. Skahas, make me a new watch, made up in equal parts of shave pates and freemen.
As you command, how many men?
As many as you require.
Resnick Mo Resnick gasped.
Magnificence! Where is the coin to come from to pay wages for so many men?
From the pyramids. I call it a blood tax. I will have 100 pieces of gold from every pyramid for each freedman that the harpy's sons have slain.
That brought a smile to the shave pate's face.
It will be done, he said. But your radiance should know that the great masters of Zak and Merrick are making preparations to quit their pyramids and leave the city.
Daenerys was sick unto death of Zak and Merrick. She was sick of all the Myrinese, great and small alike.
Let them go, but see that they take no more than the clothes upon their backs. Make certain that all their gold remains here with us, their stores of food as well.
Magnificence, murmured Resnick Mo Resnick. We cannot know that these great nobles mean to join your enemies. More like they are simply making for their estates in the hills.
They will not mind us keeping their gold safe, then. There is nothing to buy in the hills.
They are afraid for their children, Resnick said.
Yes, Daenerys thought, and so am I. We must keep them safe as well. I will have 2 children from each of them, from the other pyramids as well, a boy and a girl.
Hostages, said Skarhaus happily.
Pages and cupbearers. If the great masters make objection, explain to them that in Westeros is a great honour for a child to be chosen to serve at court.
She left the rest unspoken.
Go and do as I've commanded. I have my dead to mourn.
When she returned to her rooms atop the pyramid, she found Missandei crying softly on her pallet, trying as best she could to muffle the sound of her sobs.
Come, sleep with me, she told the little scribe. Dawn will not come for hours yet. Your grace is kind to this one.
Missandei slipped under the sheets.
He was a good brother.
Danny wrapped her arms about the girl.
Tell me of him. He taught me how to climb a tree when we was little. He could catch fish with his hands. Once I found him sleeping in our garden with 100 butterflies crawling over him. He looked so beautiful that morning. I loved him. As he loved you.
Danny stroked the girl's hair.
Say the word, my sweet, and I will send you from this awful place. I will find a ship somehow and send you home to Naith. I would sooner stay with you. On Naith I'd be afraid. What if the slavers came again? I feel safe when I'm with you.
Safe? The word made Danny's eyes fill up with tears.
I want to keep you safe.
Miss Andy was only a child. With her, she felt as if she could be a child too.
No one ever kept me safe when I was little. Well, Sir Willem did, but then he died. And Viserys, I want to protect you, but it's so hard to be strong. I don't always know what I should do. I must know, though. I am all they have. I am the queen, the
mother, whispered Miss Andy.
Mother to dragons,
Danny shivered.
No, mother to us all.
Miss Andy hugged her tighter.
Your grace should sleep. Dawn will be here soon, and court.
We'll both sleep and dream of sweeter days.
Close your eyes.
When she did, Danny kissed her eyelids and made her giggle. Kisses came easier than sleep, however. Danny shut her eyes and tried to think of home, of Dragonstone and King's Landing, and all the other places that Viserys had told her of, in a kinder land than this. But her thoughts kept turning back to Slaver's Bay, like ships caught in some bitter wind. When Miss Andy was sound asleep, Danny slipped from her arms and stepped out into the pre-dawn air to lean upon the cool brick parapet to gaze out across the city. A thousand roofs stretched out below her, painted in shades of ivory and silver by the moon. Somewhere beneath those roofs the sons of the Harpy were gathered, plotting ways to kill her and all those who loved her, and put her children back in chains. Somewhere down there a hungry child was crying for milk. Somewhere an old woman lay dying. Somewhere a man and a maid embraced and fumbled at each other's clothes with eager hands. But up here there was only the sheen of moonlight on pyramids and pits, but no hint what lay beneath. Up here there was only her, alone. She was the blood of the dragon. She could kill the sons of the Harpy, and the sons of the sons, and the sons of the sons of the sons, but a dragon could not feed a hungry child, nor help a dying woman's pain.
And who would ever dare to love a dragon?
She found herself thinking of Dario Naharis once again. Dario, with his gold tooth and triton beard, his strong hands resting on the hilts of his matched arrack and stiletto, hilts wrought of gold in the shape of naked women. The day he took his leave of her, as she was bidding him farewell, he had brushed the balls of his thumbs lightly across them, back and forth.
I'm jealous of a sword hilt, she had realized, of women made of gold.
Sending him to the Lamb Men had been wise. She was a queen, and Dario Naharis was not the stuff of kings.
It has been so long, she had said to Sir Barristan just yesterday. What if Dario has betrayed me and gone over to my enemies? Three treasons, will you know? What if he met another woman, some princess of the Lazarene?
The old knight neither liked nor trusted Dario, she knew. Even so, he had answered gallantly.
There is no woman more lovely than your grace. Only a blind man could believe otherwise, and Dario Naharis was not blind.
No, she thought.
His eyes are a deep blue, almost purple, and his gold tooth gleams when he smiles for me.
Sir Barristan was sure he would return, though. Danny could only pray that he was right.
A bath will help soothe me.
She padded barefoot through the grass to her terrace pool. The water felt cool on her skin, raising goosebumps. Little fish nibbled at her arms and legs. She closed her eyes and floated. A soft rustle made her open them again. She sat up with a soft splash. Miss Sandy, she called. Here he. Jeque.
They sleep, came the answer.
A woman stood under the persimmon tree, clad in a hooded robe that brushed the grass. Beneath the hood, her face seemed hard and shiny.
She is wearing a mask, Danny knew, a wooden mask finished in dark red lacquer. Quaith? Am I dreaming?
She pinched her ear and winced at the pain.
I dreamt of you on Balerion, when first we came to Astapor. You did not dream, then or now. What are you doing here? How did you get past my guards?
I came another way. Your guards never saw me.
If I call out, they will kill you.
They will swear to you that I am not here.
Are you here?
No. Hear me, Daenerys Targaryen. The glass candles are burning. Soon comes the pale mare, and after her, the others. Kraken and Dark Flame, Lion and Griffin, the Sun, and the Mummer's Dragon. Trust none of them. Remember the Undying. Beware the Perfume Seneschal.
Reznak, why should I fear him?
Dany rose from the pool. Water trickled down her legs, and goose flesh covered her arms in the cool night air.
If you have some warning for me, speak plainly. What do you want of me, Quaithe?
Moonlight shone in the woman's eyes.
To show you the way. I remember the way. I go north to go south, east to go west, back to go forward. And to touch the light, I have to pass beneath the shadow.
She squeezed the water from her silvery hair.
I'm half sick of riddling. In Carth I was a beggar, but here I am a queen. I command you.
Daenerys, remember the Undying. Remember who you are.
The blood of the dragon.
But my dragons are roaring in the darkness. I remember the Undying. Child of three, they called me. Three mounts, they promised me. Three fires and three treasons. One for blood, and one for gold, and one for...
Your Grace.
Missandei stood in the door of the Queen's bedchamber, a lantern in her hand.
Who are you talking to?
Dany glanced back toward the persimmon tree. There was no woman there. No hooded robe, no lacquer mask, no Quaithe.
A shadow. A memory. No one.
She was the blood of the dragon, but Sir Barristan had warned her that in that blood there was a taint.
Could I be going mad?
They had called her father mad once.
I was praying, she told the Nathy girl. It will be late soon. I had best eat something before court. I will bring you food to break your fast.
Alone again, Dany went all the way around the pyramid in hopes of finding Quaithe, past the burned trees and scorched earth where her men had tried to capture Drogon. But the only sound was the wind in the fruit trees, and the only creatures in the gardens were a few pale moths. Missandei returned with a melon and a bowl of hard-cooked eggs, but Dany found she had no appetite. As the sky lightened and the stars faded one by one, Eri and Jiqui helped her don a tokar of violet silk fringed in gold. When Reznik and Skarhaz appeared, she found herself looking at them askance, mindful of the three treasons.
Beware the perfume Seneschal.
She sniffed suspiciously at Reznik Mo Reznik. I could command the shavepate to arrest him and put him to the question. Would that forestall the prophecy, or would some other betrayer take his place?
Prophecies are treacherous, she reminded herself, and Reznik may be no more than he appears.
In the purple hall, Dany found her ebon bench piled high about with satin billows. The sight brought a wan smile to her lips. Sir Barristan's work, she knew. The old knight was a good man, but sometimes very literal.
Oh, it was only a jape, sir, she thought,
but she sat on one of the pillows just the same. Her sleepless night soon made itself felt. Before long she was fighting off a yawn, as Reznik prattled about the craftsmen's guilds. The stonemasons were wroth with her, it seemed, the bricklayers as well. Certain former slaves were carving stone and laying bricks, stealing work from guild journeymen and masters alike. The freedmen work too cheaply, magnificence, Reznik said. Some call themselves journeymen, or even masters, titles that belong by rights only to the craftsmen of the guilds. The masons and the bricklayers do respectfully petition your worship to uphold their ancient rights and customs.
The freedmen work cheaply because they are hungry, Dany pointed out.
If I forbid them to carve stone or lay bricks,
the chandlers, the weavers, and the goldsmiths will soon be at my gates, asking that they be excluded from those trades as well."
She considered a moment.
"Let it be written that henceforth only guild members shall be permitted to name themselves journeymen or masters, provided the guilds open their rolls to any freedman who can demonstrate the requisite skills."
"So shall it be proclaimed," said Resnick. "Will it please your worship to hear the noble Hisdar Zolorik?"
"Will he never admit defeat? Let him step forth."
Hisdar was not in a tokar today. Instead, he wore a simple robe of grey and blue. He was shorn as well.
"Oh, he shaved off his beard and cut his hair," she realized.
The man had not gone shave-pate, not quite. But at least those absurd wings of his were gone.
"Your barber has served you well, Hisdar. I hope you have come to show me his work, and not to plague me further about the fighting pits."
He made a deep obeisance.
"Your grace, I fear I must."
Danae grimaced. Even her own people would give no rest about the matter. Resnick Mo Resnick stressed the coin to be made through Texas. The Green Grace said that reopening the pits would please the gods. The Shave Pate felt it would win her support against the Sons of the Harpy.
"Let them fight,"
grunted Strong Belwas, who had once been a champion in the pits. Sir Barristan suggested a tourney instead. His orphans could ride at rings and fight a melee with blunted weapons, he said, a suggestion Danny knew was as hopeless as it was well-intentioned. It was blood the Myrinese yearned to see, not skill. Elsewise, the fighting slaves would have worn armor. Only the little scribe Missandei seemed to share the queen's misgivings.
"I have refused you 6 times, Danny reminded Hisdar.
"Your radiance has 7 gods, so perhaps you will look upon my 7th plea with favor. Today I do not come alone. Will you hear my friends? There are 7 of them as well."
He brought them forth one by one.
"Here is Kras. Here Barsena Blackhair, ever valiant. Here Cameron of the Count, and Gughor the Giant. This is the Spotted Cat, this fearless Ithoki, last Bellaquo Bonebreaker. They have come to add their voices to mine own, and ask your grace to let our fighting pits reopen."
Danny knew his 7, by name if not by sight. All had been amongst the most famed of Meereen's fighting slaves, and it had been the fighting slaves freed from their shackles by her sewerettes who led the uprising that won the city for her. She owed them a blood debt.
"I will hear you,"
she allowed. One by one, each of them asked her to let the fighting pits reopen. "Why?" she demanded, when Ithoki had finished.
"You are no longer slaves, doomed to die at a master's whim." "I freed you. Why should you wish to end your lives upon the Scarlet Sands?"
"I train since 3, said Gogor the giant. "I kill since 6. Mother of Dragon says I am free. Why not free to fight?"
"If it's fighting you want, fight for me. Swear your swords to the mother's men, or the free brothers, or the stalwart shields. Teach my other freedmen how to fight."
Gogor shook his head. "Before I fight for master, you say fight for you. I say fight for me."
The huge man thumped his chest with a fist as big as a ham.
"For gold, for glory."
"Gogor speaks for us all."
The spotted cat wore a leopard skin across one shoulder.
"The last time I was sold, the price was 300,000 honors. When I was a slave, I slept on furs and ate red meat off the bone. Now that I'm free, I sleep on straw and eat salt fish when I can get it."
"Hisdar swears that the winners shall share half of all the coin collected at the gates," said Kras. "Half, he swears it. And Hisdar is an honorable man."
"No, a cunning man." Delirious felt trapped.
"And the losers, what shall they receive?" "Their name shall be graven on the gates of fate amongst the other valiant fallen,' declared Basina. "'For 8 years